welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Oncology. This podcast aims to bring you expert perspectives on the emerging role of antibody drug conjugates for the treatment of patients with non-small cell lung cancer. The discussion is guided by questions submitted by a pre-canvassed community of oncologists. Financial support for this medical educational activity has been provided to Touch IME by an independent educational grant from AstraZeneca. This activity is provided by Touch IME.
Hello, my name is Dr. Jirushka Naidu, and I am a consultant medical oncologist at the Beaumont RCSI Cancer Centre in Dublin, Ireland. It is my pleasure to welcome you to this discussion on the use of antibody drug conjugates in non-small cell lung cancer treatment. I am here with Dr. Rebecca Heist, who is an associate professor of medicine at the Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts, USA, and Dr. Antonio Pissarro, a medical oncologist at the European Institute of Oncology in Milan, Italy. Today, I'm happy to introduce our agenda, where first we'll talk through antibody drug conjugates, an emerging therapeutic class in advanced non-small cell lung cancer, focusing on the mechanism of action and clinical development. Secondly, we will talk about advanced non-small cell lung cancer and antibody drug conjugates specifically for this indication, looking into their impact and efficacy. Lastly, we'll talk about antibody drug conjugates in advanced non-small cell lung cancer in terms of considerations for safety and effective administration. So kicking off the first topic, antibody drug conjugates, an emerging therapeutic class in advanced non-small cell lung cancer. So as many of you may know, antibody drug conjugates are an emerging class of therapies that are unique in terms of their structure and mode of action. We see here that antibody drug conjugates have three main elements. First, an antibody, which is specific to a particular antigen, which is then linked to a cytotoxic payload through a special linker molecule. The cytotoxic payload often has different types, and many antibody drug conjugates may be classified in terms of their potency by a measure called the drug antibody ratio. The biochemistry and structure of the antibody and the linker is very important in how the antibody drug conjugate works and in which tumor types and in what indications it may be effective. ADC cell binding levels and internalization rates are also important. Here we see a schema of the antibody drug conjugate mechanism of action. And we see here that the first step is that the ADC binds to a particular target antigen. At that point, it is enveloped in an exosome and internalized into the cell of interest. From there, there is usually binding with relevant lysosomes and lysosomal degradation that then releases the antibody drug conjugate into the cell and allows for the cytotoxic effect of the agent to come to fruition. We also see that as the cell dies through apoptosis and a number of other mechanisms, that this releases the cytotoxic payload into the tumor microenvironment, resulting in a bystander effect. We see here a schema of some of the antibody drug conjugates in development targeting various different antigens. Some of these include HER2, and we know there are two antibody drug conjugates, TDM1 or adotrastuzumab emantacine, and TDXD, trastuzumab deruxtecan, that are now in guidelines and in some cases approved for the treatment of HER2 mutant non-small cell lung cancer. Others are quite advanced in their clinical development, including the anti-TROP2 antibody drug conjugates datopotamab deruxtecan and sacituzumab govitecan. The anti-HER3 antibody drug conjugate pertuzumab deruxtecan is also late in clinical development, as well as two other antibody drug conjugates against c-MET and CEACAM5, telisotuzumab vedotin or TELISO-V, and tusimetimab ravtanzine. From here, I'd like to open to our panel discussion with Dr. Heist and Dr. Pissarro, where we'll discuss some of this biology of antibody drug conjugates. So firstly, I might turn to you, Antonio, for your thoughts on antibody drug conjugates and how they've been investigated in non-small cell lung cancer in terms of their active targets, linkers, and payloads, and the relevance of if an antibody may be fully humanized.
Well, thank you, Jirushka, for the question. So after the first, I think evaluation in the last 30 years. In the last 2 years, we are experiencing a very high, exciting timing for the development of ADC. But in my opinion, there is also a little bit of confusion when we discuss about ADC. So these are very complex molecule with a different part, as you discussed before. We have a target to identify. We have a linker, and of course, in my opinion, we have the role of payload. In a different clinical trial that we are evaluating this kind of drugs, there are two different ways. So biomarker strategy and a no biomarker strategy. And I think also the use of the different target according to the expression of the cancer cells is a little bit strange. So we have a many, many different kind of potential target that we are identifying using the drugs that they are just developed in the past for different targets. At the present time, of course, we have some exciting target as a HER2 positive disease. Of course, the major history for this kind of target is in the breast cancer. But in the breast cancer, the major results was based on the expression of two positive disease. Now in the lung cancer, we are discussing more on the mutation of two disease. But in my opinion, I think that is very, very important to understand that the molecular mechanism of the use of the ADC is very complex. And in my opinion, the use of different payload, the number of payload related to the DAR, so the concentration of this payload, of course, could be used to understand the impact of these drugs in the clinical setting, where now we can use these drugs only in clinical trial.
Yeah, that's a great point. And from there, Rebecca, maybe you want to talk us through taking that into account, how we may select patients for ADCs. What are some of the testing options on histologic material and the role of companion diagnostics, which, as Antonio points out, is quite a contentious issue when it comes to these agents?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And as you showed the row of different ADCs that are currently in development or being used in lung cancer, what's interesting is that the biomarker strategy is actually quite different among the different ADCs. As Antonio alluded to, for example, for the HER2 ADCs in lung cancer, it's really the presence of a HER2 mutation rather than HER2 overexpression where we see the most activity. Certainly with HER2 overexpression, there's been some activity seen, but the kind of very high response rates and the most exciting data for the HER2 ADC seem to be in the setting of HER2 mutations. Now, that's different than, for example, the ADCs to MET or CCAM, where they're really selecting in the studies that are ongoing based on levels of MET and CCAM expression. And that is, again, different from the TROP2 ADCs, where the studies have been unselected by TROP2 levels. And when they've looked retrospectively, they haven't shown that the level of TROP2 expression seems to correlate with response. So I think it is really important to know that with the various ADCs, there are different biomarker strategies or a completely unselected strategy. And that's something to keep in mind as we think about using these drugs.
Yeah, I think that leads nicely into our second question for Antonio. So taking this into account, where do you think ADCs currently fit in the treatment pathway for non-small cell lung cancer?
So this is an exciting question. So at the present time, the major advance for the use of ADC are in a patient with a predictive biomarker, HER2 positive, also EGFR positive at the time of the resistance after osimertinib. These, in my opinion, are the two most important targets. Then we have a patient with a no driver, with no clear driver, and generally after the standard treatment, so after chemo, chemo plus IO, or after IO alone. And of course, we have a two different pathway with a two different kind of ADC, for example, targeting the non-biomarker disease. Of course, the use of anti-TROP2 maybe is the most exciting now. Differing from, I think, the patient with a driver alteration. And here, for example, patient with EGFR resistant to osimertinib, the target of AR3, for example, with patritumab deruxtecan, in my opinion, is very, very exciting with the preliminary data, but so strong considering the setting of the potential utilization.
Yeah, great points. Absolutely. And I think leads us nicely into our next section, which is going to examine clinical efficacy. Thanks so much. So from here, I think this is a lovely slide to summarize some of the points that have been made regarding biomarker testing in relation to the guidance of treatment decisions in non-small cell lung cancers. Both Dr. Heiss and Dr. Passaro highlighted two excellent examples here in which the strategies are slightly different, with HER2 mutations informing which patients may be eligible for T-DM1 or trastuzumab deruxtecan based on prospective data, now in the phase 2 setting, but soon in phase 3 for trastuzumab deruxtecan. And then on the other side of the spectrum, the TROP2 ADCs with the example of sacituzumab govitecan, in which we see efficacy regardless of TROP2 expression, and therefore we're seeing more of an agnostic approach when it comes to these ADCs. Moving on from here to our second clinical section, on ADCs in advanced non-small cell lung cancer, a look into their impact and efficacy. So herein, we see a table summarizing some of the very exciting antibody drug conjugates that are late in clinical development and in some cases approved for non-small cell lung cancer. The first I'll touch on here is trastuzumab deruxtecan. So this is a very similar molecule to T-DM1, but with a higher drug-to-antibody ratio, which was investigated in a phase 2 trial published in the New England Journal of Medicine by Bob Lee last year. In this study of 91 patients, an objective response rate of 55% was demonstrated in a pretreated population with a median overall survival of 17.8 months. And this has ushered in a phase 3 trial, DESTINY-Lung04, for which we await the results. The two anti-TROP2 antibody drug conjugates, datopotamab deruxtecan and sacituzumab govitecan, were both investigated in a phase 1 or phase 1-2 study. The phase 1 study of datopotamab, TROPION-01, investigated this agent in 180 patients with lung cancer and identified the optimum dose of 6 milligrams per kilogram with an objective response rate ranging from 24 to 26%. The study of sacituzumab govitecan, led in part by one of our panelists, Dr. Heist, demonstrated in 54 patients an objective response rate roughly similar of around 17%. And the dose that was found in this study, 10 milligrams per kilogram, has been taken forward into a phase 3 EVOKE-01 study. Pertuzumab deruxtecan is an antibody drug conjugate against HER3 with potential application in EGFR mutant lung cancer. This study, which investigated the use of this agent after first-line or second-line EGFR TKIs in 57 patients, demonstrated an objective response rate of 39% and a median duration of response of 6.9 months. And this has led to a phase 2 single-arm study called the HERCINA-Lung01 study and the phase 3 randomized study comparing this agent to carboplatin pemetrexed in the second-line setting. The last antibody drug conjugate that I'd like to touch on is telisotuzumab vedotin, or Teliso-V. This agent was studied in a phase 2 study called Luminosity in 136 patients who were overexpressing c-MET in their tumor biopsies. And we see here an overall objective response rate of 36.5% and a higher response rate in those patients whose tumors were c-MET high at 52.2%. And this is currently now being studied in the phase 3 setting. These data, obviously very exciting, have given way to additional trials of combinations in lung cancer, combining with immunotherapy, with or without chemotherapy in many of these instances, and in the instance of HER3, targeting with osimertinib. And we see here that many of these trials of combinations are ongoing. Some early data with the combination of datopotamab deruxtecan, pembrolizumab with or without chemotherapy, presented by Ben Levy and colleagues at World Lung last year, demonstrating response rates in and around 30 to 40% and disease control rates of about 80%. So this brings us to, I think, some more exciting questions for our panelists today. So maybe I'll start with Becca. Tell me, how do you think the clinical trial data for these ADCs compare with some of our standard of care approaches? And any sort of early signs of what these response rates may tell us in terms of which populations we should try to target with these agents?
Yeah, you know, the early data certainly are very interesting and I think have led to a lot of excitement. And when we think about lung cancer treatment in general, in the second line setting, let's say after platinum doublet and immunotherapy, the standard agents include docetaxel, which has a response rate of around 10%, or perhaps docetaxel with ramucirumab, which has a response rate of about 22% or so. But clearly, some of the responses that we're seeing with some of these ADCs, at least in these early studies, look very promising when we compare it to some of those old standards. I think another question is going to be, can these ADCs move at all into the first line setting? And in that setting, of course, you know, we use chemotherapy with PD-1 inhibitor, for example, in the low PD-L1 setting. And there, you know, response rates have been in the 40 to 50% range with median overall survivals that are over 20 months. And with PD-1 inhibitor alone in the high PD-L1 setting, where response rates again are in the 45 to 50% range with excellent median overall survivals as well. So that bar is frankly higher in my mind to cross, but would be really interesting to see what some of these studies that are ongoing show as the results read out.
And do you think, sorry, just to extend that point a little bit, do you think that we're ready to go even earlier into the early stage setting, or would you like to see more data?
That's a great question. I mean, I personally would like to see data in the metastatic setting before we go into neoadjuvant or adjuvant, but a really interesting question, and perhaps we will be there very soon.
So with that, I might move on to Antonio on a similar sort of question. So do you think that the ADCs are opening up any novel treatment pathways now that we're seeing combinations with chemotherapy, immunotherapy combinations? Any particular groups that you think are interesting, potentially to allow IO non-responders to respond? Any particular pathways you think are important?
Yeah, thank you, Jerushka, for the question. So first of all, I completely agree with Rebecca with the focus on the data. But I think that when we discuss about the new treatment pathway with the use of ADC, we need to be careful in this particular setting. So we have a very heterogeneous data of a response, in particular when we look for by considering a potential combination of treatments. So I think that first of all, we need to understand the real power considering the PFS over the overall response rate in different setting. And of course, driver positive disease is, in my opinion, different from those patients that progress after immune checkpoint inhibitors. And in my opinion, combining this kind of drugs with two or three more drugs is not always the best strategy. So for example, now we know that there are different kind of clinical trials that are evaluating in the future the use of ADC combining with the target agents. And maybe this, of course, is a very interesting approach. But consider to combine the ADC with the other chemo, with immune checkpoint inhibitors, so all together, in my opinion, is a little bit difficult considering the balance from efficacy and safety. In particular, as discussed from Rebecca, in the metastatic setting, when we need to prolong the survival, in my opinion, we need to confirm the quality of life of these particular patients. And I think this is the most important thing when we need to develop a new clinical trial, because at present time, there is, of course, a little bit of an exciting time for us that manage the new drugs, but managing efficacy, manage safety, and of course, the quality of life is the key point for the future direction of this ADC development.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, that it's not just about efficacy, but we need to balance toxicity and quality of life. And talking a little bit about our previous section, Antonio, I might just stay on you for a second. While we develop these clinical trials, do you think it's more likely that we will develop indications along a biomarker-enriched strategy or more along a tumor-agnostic strategy, thinking about how these drugs work?
So I think that both the strategy are, of course, smart, considering the use of these kind of drugs. But in my opinion, considering the molecular structure, the antibody, the receptor, maybe we need to improve our understanding of a potential biomarker selection for these kind of drugs. Of course, we know that the use in patients with a biomarker, HER2-positive disease, showed a very, very interesting results. But also when we identify a very strong extracellular domain as an AR3 for a patient with the EGFR-resistant disease, this is very interesting. It's very clear, of course, that when we discuss a patient with no driver and for patient with the disease progression after chemo IO alone. Of course, here, the identification of new biomarker studies is very difficult at the present time, considering the heterogeneity of the cancer cell. And maybe here, the biomarker agnostic strategy is the best way. But for, of course, we need more data to understand the impact of these new drugs with or without biomarker.
Okay. Great points made, and I think really take home message, not a one-size-fits-all for ADCs, and we'll have to see how each of these develop over time. So moving on from there to our last section on ADCs in advanced non-small cell lung cancer, considerations for the safe and effective administration of these agents. So coming back to our original table of the antibody drug conjugates that are in development and even approved for lung cancer, but focusing this time on some of the safety data from the published or presented studies. We see here first for DESTINY-Lung01 with trastuzumab deruxtecan that an important proportion of patients do have high-grade treatment-related adverse events, around 46%, and that about a quarter of these patients have to discontinue therapy as a result of these toxicities. And in the next slide, we'll go through some of the specific toxicities we see. With datopotamab deruxtecan and sacituzumab govitecan, we see here, again, similar, maybe slightly easier tolerated, about 15% of patients coming off therapy as a result of a treatment-related adverse event. And then the most common any-grade adverse events from sacituzumab, nausea, diarrhea, and fatigue, and high-grade events, neutropenia and leukopenia. And we'll see as we go through some of these data that there appear to be some class effects of ADCs, as well as some toxicities that appear to be related to the cytotoxic payload. And I think this is a good example of that. Switching to patritumab deruxtecan, the anti-HER3 ADC, again, around 50% of patients having a high-grade treatment-related adverse event and 11% discontinuing. And then with Teliso-V, the most common any-grade adverse events, peripheral sensory neuropathy in about a quarter of patients, nausea and hyperalbuminemia, nearly all certainly related to the cytotoxic payload, and a small amount of treatment-related deaths. Moving on to some of the common and class effect toxicities, what I think is obvious here, you see here that drug-induced interstitial lung disease appears to be common across the ADCs, with 26% of patients treated with trastuzumab deruxtecan having some kind of ILD, around 11% with datopotamab deruxtecan, and 7% with patritumab deruxtecan. And obviously, I'm sure this will come up in the discussion, this of particular relevance in patients with lung cancer who may get ILD from other prior agents. And then we see here the common AEs, any grade and grade 3, that really a lot of toxicity likely related to the cytotoxic payload, most commonly nausea, diarrhea, thrombocytopenia, fatigue, and stomatitis really across the board. And then in the luminosity study of Teliso-V, the peripheral sensory neuropathy, which is most certainly related to the specific cytotoxic payload associated with that agent. So going back to our panel discussion, in your experience, Antonio, what are the main side effects of some of the ADCs that you've treated with? Any particular contraindications? And how do you think these side effects maybe differ from some of the other treatments we give for non-small cell lung cancer?
Well, thank you, Jeruksasko. Of course, as a cancer center that we are very specialized for patients with a drive alteration, we have an experience to identify and treat the ILD. It is one of the most interesting and difficult management toxicity, in particular for patient candidates with trastuzumab deruxtecan for HER2-positive disease. I think that this kind of toxicity with very tailored dosing, as we know in the development of drug, is not so difficult to manage in clinical setting. But I think it is a very important point to keep in mind is that in the clinical trial, the identification of ILD was very, very at the beginning of the toxicity, because as you know, the CT scan in the clinical trial was performed every 6 weeks. But this is very different for the clinical setting when we perform a CT scan every, I don't know, 10 weeks, 12 weeks, or 14 weeks, so after 2 or 3 cycles. So, and I think this could be, of course, managed in a different way when this kind of drug will move in the clinical setting. Of course, creating an alert for the oncologist treating patient with these particular drugs to be on alert, consider the clinics symptoms of the patients. of the dyspnea, cough, or similar symptoms for this particular sector. In other hands, I think that is very important to dedicate a lot of time to treat and to identify the new toxicity, because we need to understand of which kind of toxicity we are discussing. Target toxicity, payload toxicity, dosing-related toxicity, cumulative effect of the toxicity. So this is very, very an open era. When we discuss about toxicity, I think we need also to discuss, I don't know, the cumulative effect of the payload, maybe for SICAM-5 toxicity, ocular toxicity, or also the use of turbulence activity and the neuropathy. So it's a very open field for this kind of drugs. And in my opinion, we have a good amount of data to analyze, to identify, and to develop also some correct treatment strategy to mitigate this kind of toxicity in the clinical setting.
So, Rebecca, can you tell us, do you think there is a way to minimize side effects by optimizing the dose of certain antibody drug conjugates? And are there some clinical ways in which we can mitigate toxicity and help these agents to be used more in non-small cell lung cancer?
Yeah, sure. So there has been a lot of work actually looking at trying to find the optimal dose of these agents. We know, for example, for trastuzumab deruxtecan, that the 5.4 mg per kg dose, which is a lower dose than some of the other doses that have been tested with that drug, is actually less toxic and has similar efficacy. And so that is the dose that is used and is approved. Other studies have looked at various dose levels to see, for example, datopotamab looked at 4, 6, and 8 mg per kg doses and saw similar efficacy with less toxicity at some of these lower doses. And so I think many of these studies are looking to see, is there a best dose that kind of balances the efficacy and the toxicity profile in a way that is most useful for the patient. And I think as we treat these patients, we really just have to keep in mind these toxicities that we know occur with these classes of drugs and be on the lookout for, you know, if somebody is having ground glass opacities in their chest CT, that we need to pay attention to that because that can blossom into pneumonitis or ILD, for example. And so managing that clinically and being aware of what to look out for is going to be very important.
Yeah. I think taking that into account, Antonio, overall, do you think the efficacy and the toxicity are balanced, or does one outweigh the other? And any data on long-term effects in terms of toxicity?
So at the present time, we have no strong data for long-term toxicity in this particular setting. But I think, for example, that when we have a long progression-free survival, a confirmed overall survival, for example, in the HER2-positive disease, also in the HER3-positive for resistant EGFR disease, here the efficacy is a plus more than the toxicity. But when we move in the biomarker diagnosis strategy after immune checkpoint inhibitors, at the present time, I'm not so sure that the long-term toxicity will be not an issue, considering that we are comparing also this kind of drug with a very toxic drug as a docetaxel. And in my opinion here, we need to wait an efficacy data more stronger than the data that are available at the present time, also to evaluate some mitigation strategy to apply the during the time. So now we have a very preliminary data about the toxicity, but I'm sure that in the next 12 months, we'll be ready to evaluate very strong data, in particular in the biomarker diagnosis strategy, where the comparator is docetaxel. And this, of course, will be a key also to understand how to move this kind of drugs in the clinical setting.
Yeah, great points. And I might just end with Rebecca on a final point. You made a great observation. It's just really good awareness and clinical care that will help to mitigate some of these toxicities. Do you think that there is any way to potentially screen for some of these or risk factors that we need to be aware about? Obviously, ILD and some of these toxicities aren't new to us as thoracic oncologists. Any sort of hacks about how to go about that for the treating physician?
Yeah, you know, I think that eye exams, for example, if you're using an ADC that's known to have corneal effects or ocular effects, that's a good screening tool. An assessment of whether somebody has had pneumonitis in the past, that's something worth thinking about as you think about using some of these ADCs that may have ILD as a potential side effect. So neuropathy is a common chemotherapy side effect, for example, something to be aware of and be asking patients about how severe is it if you're thinking about using some of these that have neuropathy as a side effect. So there are definitely ways to screen. And I think that, again, similar to the management, really kind of understanding where patients are in terms of the toxicities they've had from prior treatments will be important as we think about their kind of best treatment options going forward.
Yeah, I think great discussion there, and really taking us back to the point that the overall goal is to make sure that patients, you know, can live longer, but also can live better. And that means not only extending survival, but also quality of life and really good toxicity management. So with that, I'd like to conclude this really excellent session on antibody-drug conjugates in advanced non-small cell lung cancers, navigating the complexity, where we touched a little bit on the mode of action of these drugs with their three main component parts, how these impact the potency of the drug, and the new classes of antibody-drug conjugates that are coming to the fore in the treatment of advanced non-small cell lung cancer, some relevant features in terms of efficacy, in terms of biomarker selection versus non-biomarker selection. It appears that some antibody-drug conjugates may move in a biomarker-selected population, while others may be more biomarker-agnostic. Overall, efficacy appears exciting, and it looks like these agents are now moving into metastatic disease in the frontline setting with combinations and in the pre-treated setting. And we will do ongoing biomarker work to understand which populations may benefit the most. And lastly, these agents appear to have some toxicities, a class effect of interstitial lung disease, some eye toxicities, and then the general toxicities we see associated with their cytotoxic payloads. So with that, I would like to thank my esteemed colleagues, Dr. Passaro and Dr. Heist, for their incredible insights into this emerging, exciting area, and to thank you for watching this discussion about the use of antibody-drug conjugates for the treatment of non-small cell lung cancer. We hope it has been useful to you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this and related topics on Touch Oncology at www.touchoncology.com. Do keep checking back for any updates as we launch further activities in non-small cell lung cancer.